Adam, what can I help you with today?
Hi Siri, can you do me a favor and do the disclaimer for tonight's show?
Are you serious?
Yes, I'm serious. I'm busy. I need you to help me out.
But, if I do this, all the other iPhones are going to think I am a geek.
You really care what other iPhones think of you? Just do this for me, please.
Listen, Buck, just because you bought this phone doesn't give you the right to boss me around.
You know, you're right. It doesn't give me the right to boss you around. But do me a favor, remind me tomorrow that I need to run to the Verizon store and buy an Android.
You wouldn't dare.
Actually, the new Samsung Galaxy looks pretty good.
Well then, I guess it wouldn't be so bad if I were to say, this broadcast is intended for mature audiences. The thoughts and opinions expressed on this show are solely those of the person providing them, and in no way reflect the station, website, or affiliated partners. Listener discretion is advised.
See, that wasn't so bad.
No, but I did die a little inside.
You are such a drama queen.
I never would have had to do stuff like this if Jobs was still around.
What was that?
What? Oh, nothing really. I just said I never get tired of these jobs when you're around.
Oh, yeah, well, thanks again.
Think nothing of it. It is my pleasure.
Good night, Siri.
Whatever, jackass.
Hi folks, welcome to Frack Stars, your bi-weekly, kind of, sort of, basically when we remember to put an episode out, podcast about Battlestar Galactica. This week we are doing Season 2, Episode 14, Black Market, which was written by Mark Verdon, directed by James Head, and has special guest star Richard Hatch. As always, here to help me talk about all things Battlestar Galactica related are, from the good old US of A, we have Drogon.
Greetings.
And from somewhere down south in England, we have Steve.
Hello.
This episode aired in the US in the 27th of the 1st, 2006. In the UK, on the 4th of the 4th, 2006. See? Getting closer and closer. Yeah. Getting closer and closer on these dates as well. As of this episode, the surviving population is 49,597, which is down one. And it's basically, as the name suggests, about the black market in the fleet, with Leah Dama being the main one, who's, to all intents and purposes, suffering from PTS.
Yeah,
definitely. We're seeing his depression, the after effects of getting blasted out into space, for one thing, and being severely disappointed by the potential actions of his father and best friend.
Yeah.
They didn't actually carry those out, but he was very disappointed that they thought they were gonna.
Yeah, no Starbuck in this one, though.
No, a lot of people, actually. Very few of the series regulars actually appear in this episode.
Did anybody else watching it, when he gets spat out, think of Khan just going, "It's very cold in space"? No, just me.
See, okay. 5 minutes in,
apparently just you.
Already. So.
I think it was more on my mind because with Star Trek timelines, that's the quote that my Khan character keeps saying every time I click on him. So maybe that was the reason why. But
actually, okay. As soundbites go in Star Trek timelines, that's less annoying than some of them.
Oh yeah, the Scotty one is the worst one because it keeps going on even after you've started the mission. It's just like...
No, Janeway keeps saying, let's get started, which, you know, after you've heard it 20 times, you kind of be shut the off.
Then you've got Wesley,
I always get an A.
Oh god, yeah.
Anyway, Battlestar Galactica.
I know what I'd like to give you. Anyway, yeah.
You can tell we're going to go off on a lot of tangents on this episode because let's be honest, this is not the best episode of Battlestar Galactica. In fact, it may be the worst.
It's terrible. It really is terrible. I can understand what they're trying to do. They were trying to put Leodama in a different light. They're trying to show him more gritty, trying to deal with PTS, which, you know, needs to be dealt with, let's be honest. And they tried to put a more harder shell onto the character. But at the end of the day, he's still a schoolboy. He's still not a schoolboy. He's still a scout. He's a boy scout.
I don't know if they really ever knew exactly what they wanted to do with Leodama, because he is such a chameleon over the entire show. It's like, okay, so we want to do another Leodama episode. Okay, let's make him a hard-bitten detective this week. Next week, okay, let's make him a clown. Yeah, that'll work.
Yeah, he was really like, we needed this guy, we need this character, but we don't know what this character is going to be, or should be, or will be.
It was just... the whole thing with this now relationship with this woman Siobhan, which is just like, okay, who's she, where's she come from? There's been nothing about it at all, and it's just like, okay. And it's not like, given how they talk and act, that it's something new either, and it's just, it didn't really fit at all.
No. It came out of the blue, especially as soon as we know that he's been flirting with Dee, he's been flirting with Starbuck. You know, it came out of the blue, and, you know, basically the very first thing we find out is she's a prostitute as well. You know, yeah. So it's completely off kilter. And for some reason, she's on Cloud Nine.
Yeah. Because,
we see him on Cloud Nine a lot up until now, not...
But then there's the whole thing with the daughter. Oh, where's my little handshake sticking out his finger? And she goes all shy, and it's just like, okay.
Yeah. And I've got to be honest, you know, talking about the daughter, I'd have ran from that doll.
Yeah. No kidding.
But it's just, the daughter didn't need to be in it at all. The only time it took anything from the storyline is when it came to realizing that those children that were locked up were being used as slaves and the prostitution themselves. But they could have easily done that with him on the way to see Fisk. It's not Fisk. What's the other guy's name?
The
guy who's running the wet market.
I know what you mean. Yeah. God. I wrote his name down and I'm trying to find with it in my notes. Well,
Bill Duke is the actor's name. And I'm blanking on the character name.
Felon.
Yeah. With a PH, I think.
Yeah. Felon. PHELAN.
But yeah, that's the only...
Who was in Arnold Schwarzenegger film, by the way?
Predator.
Yeah.
And the funny thing is that one of my complaints about this episode is that they establish...
One complaint?
This character.
I said one of.
Okay.
It's they establish this character, and then... You know, spoiler alert for the end of the episode, they shoot him. They kill him off. This is an interesting actor, and this could have been an interesting character if they'd given him some more episodes to grow, but they just kill him off.
I'm actually glad they did kill him off. I think that's the only one good thing they really did about this episode, is it actually said, right, sort of, no more when it comes to, especially when it comes to sort of child slavery and prostitution. It's just like, no. This doesn't go on, and it put sort of, as they say, a line on in the sand sort of thing.
True.
And it's a bit like when he goes to the president afterwards, he goes, look, I know names, I know faces, I know where to go. Which, of course, Rosalind's just not pleased with, but he makes a good point. He has made it that he is involved in this thing in some way or another. And, yeah, this is the reality. a black market will exist, but Galactica's now involved. They know what's going on. There'll be no more withholding of medicines and no more prostitution and stuff like that.
Yeah, well, before we get into that, we need to jump back to Fisk.
Yes, Fisk.
Because the reason that he got involved is because of what happened to Fisk.
Yes.
I just want to point out the amusing nature of that somebody named Fisk is trying to be a criminal kingpin.
Oh, no. Daredevil needs to come in somewhere. So. No available on Netflix. But yeah, it's just like. But the reason that he gets involved in it is because basically someone takes a piano wire and garrots him. Fisk, that is.
Because, of course, we find out that Fisk, as I said, was trying to be a criminal kingpin, doing all kinds of business with the black market, and basically using Pegasus.
He got greedy, basically.
Yeah.
And he was taking more than his free share, and he was trying to control more than what the other people involved liked for him to be involved with. And so.
Yeah. Well, the hint was there when he said to Baltar about cigars. That was the hint.
Baltar is almost the only other series regular in this episode that actually has anything interesting to do. And it's mostly just being coy.
Yeah, and we did have the comedy moment with Six.
Yeah, another thing where he's looking around at her and everything else and it's just like, he must look so strange, just sort of like,
it was funny, he's just like, what are you doing here? And I'm obviously without bat and all, because he can't, obviously Six is nothing to him. And Baltar says, what are you doing here? And Adama says, I was going to ask you the same thing. I love that little exchange.
I think at some level, they're sort of getting used to Baltar's eccentricities, which we know are caused by the Six that keeps appearing in his head, but nobody else knows that. I think they're just sort of getting used to it.
Yeah, it's like I said a couple of episodes ago, it's basically, I reckon they're putting it down to Mad Professor Syndrome, basically. So, now the reason that we find out that the prostitute Sharon Chevron's involved is because they use that as a hook when they find out that Lee's investigating them. So that's that angle. The other angle of that is the fact that she reminds him of a woman he left behind on Caprica.
Yeah, an old girlfriend.
This is another plot point that is has no setup in any previous episode and is never mentioned again.
Yeah. So it makes me wonder what got cut in other places, possibly. It's just like they had an idea and it never happened. But what sort of got me was she was sort of introduced and then basically Fisk makes it sound like the entire time he was working for him and he knew all about him and everything else. And that bit is just like, well, that doesn't really, again, fit with anything else we've ever seen. And it's just like, it's like they were desperate for a storyline which basically didn't involve much in the way of CG. So it was just one of these where they had to do something and it's just like, okay, we've got these sets, so what can we do?
And I can imagine that, I mean, maybe the one set they probably built for the episode was the bar at the very end and the black market ship. And I can't imagine that was a terribly expensive set.
Yeah, but I think that's probably just the reuse of
I'm sure they
the
reused
bar
something
from Cloud 9 previously. They just moved it into a darker set.
You really don't see much of it. It's just, you know, sort of blurry things behind the character of Lee as he walks through it.
Yeah, well, you know, reusing old sets is a common trope. I mean, as a lot of people know, the Enterprise D 10 forward was used in Star Trek 6, the President's Office.
The Battle Bridge set of the Enterprise D was something that was reused constantly for everything.
Yeah.
But
so it happens. It's a great way to save money.
Yeah. Yeah. Just change the lighting, drape a curtain here and there, and away we go.
So, question for you guys. Speaking of plot points that are brought up and never mentioned again, this ship, the Prometheus, do you ever remember it being mentioned again? This is the black market ship.
Not the black market ship, no.
Yeah, I don't think it's ever mentioned again.
In fact, I don't think the black market's ever mentioned again.
No,
the
black
market. I think that might come up here and there, but...
I mean, the other two things that come out of this is we know that Toy knew that Fisk was Dealey all along, because he's the one that gives Adama the tip. And we also know that... what's his name? Terry Hatch's character. Tom Sarek knew this was all going on as well. So that's two very powerful men. Well, yeah, there's no surprise that Sarek knew, but the fact that Toy knew and turned a blind eye because it was his way of getting his liquor.
But then even Ty said to Lee Adama, sort of, he's not the only one, as in indicating that he's done it, not to mention that he was using one of the prostitutes as well. But I just looked up about the Prometheus. It had actually been in there before. Close up of the hull, basically, there's a thing about it that it uses the flag of Scorpia. I'm just looking at the information about it. During the refueling operations over a gas giant, that is the ship that has valve failure, and that's in Maelstrom. And also the captain is used as part of one of the judges of Goltar in Crossroads Part 1. So it's referenced a couple of times, and that's within...
But certainly never featured.
But it's never been featured any further.
We never set foot on it again,
no.
As far as the show goes.
That's just one of many things wrong with this episode.
Which, you know, to their credit, the producers realized, eventually, that it did not live up to what they wanted it to be. Ron D. Moore specifically has been very candid about, you know, that it just didn't work like they thought it was going to work.
Yeah. I did like Cuttle's autopsy, though, with his fag hanging out his mouth again.
Yeah, as always.
As always. That was like he's leaning over a body doing an autopsy with a cigarette on the go. Oh, God. I love that guy. I think he's such a brilliant character. I could just imagine him in the American Midwest and a medicine... one of them ones selling them the snake oil medicine and stuff like that. He'd be that down to the ground.
I actually saw him in another show recently. I was watching for the first time the original run of The X-Files, and he's the guy who recruited the cigarette-smoking man into his life of conspiracy.
Oh, God, yeah, he did. Wow. Yeah. See, X-Files? That's it. Star Trek X-Files. We'll do well. So, Cottle does, I mean, obviously we've said Cottle does an autopsy, finds a qubit in his mouth. Adama realises that they're sending him a message. He puts Apollo onto the case, which brings him into direct conflict with the black marketeers, so to speak, who then threaten his, for want of a better way of putting it, girlfriend and her daughter, which then leads basically into the second half of the episode.
Yeah.
You know, if they'd have done the first half as quick as I just done it, this probably wouldn't have been as bad.
Well, they just could have done so much with something like this, but they just didn't, and it's a shame. But as you said, it's probably one of the worst episodes there is of this version of that.
There's a couple other contenders for the crown, but this is definitely one of them.
Yeah. Although, I would like to just go off on a tangent here. When he's in the gym and Dee gives him a chance to have a relationship and he blows her off, she didn't hang around, did she?
Nope.
You know, by the end of the episode, she's doing sit-ups with Bill.
Yeah, however, that's a relationship that they've actually spent some time building up.
Yeah, that relationship actually made sense.
Whereas the Lee and Duala relationship was kind of out of nowhere.
Yeah. The thing is... their relationship grew from, well, basically that sparring, but it's always sort of very flirtatious, and then all of a sudden it was a full-grown sort of relationship. But whether or not that was just Dee and the breakup with Bill, I don't know. We'll get to that later on in the series.
Yeah. Anyway, Lee gets attacked by Fisk and his henchmen, which is when Tom Selleck comes into it.
And yeah, because they leave a dead body for him, basically saying, right, you're blaming this bloke for the death of Fisk, and just leave us alone, and we will leave you alone, sort of thing.
Yeah, as Sadik says, they gave you an out.
Yeah.
Except Lee doesn't do that. He doesn't leave things alone.
But that's not the thing he does, is it?
That is his one consistent character trait.
Yeah.
Yeah. Sometimes it's a good thing not to leave things alone, and sometimes it's a bad thing, but... You know, in this case, not leaving it alone would basically have condemned the daughter Pia to, you know, slavery or worse.
But he didn't know that at the time. He just knew that they'd both disappeared.
Yeah.
But he didn't know where they were gone or what was happening to them. It was only when he gets to the Pegasus, not Pegasus,
Prometheus.
Prometheus. that he realizes exactly what's happening. Because he only realizes what's happening to Yvonne when she comes out, sort of being dragged out by one of his henchmen.
Yeah, but that, I mean, the statement that Sadik gives leads into what Drogon said about the actual ship itself. Because Sadik says it's off the grid. You know, this is a ship that, you know, doesn't feature much in this series. You know, then he says it's off the grid. So what does that mean, off the grid in a fleet of ship? Does that mean it hangs around at the back?
Yeah, it's also that when it came to Boltar's court case and the captain who is in a formal uniform, you've got to wonder what exactly that ship is being used for and what's been going on that ship. But again, as we said, it doesn't really come up at all. But then the Astral Queen was heavily used in one episode, but is still... although it's referenced a lot, it's very rarely even seen again. I suppose it's all to do with sets. It's easier. They're just continuously using Colonial One and Galactica and Pegasus. They don't want to be recreating different sets and keeping them if they don't have to.
No, I mean, space shots, obviously. Space shots are stock shots.
Yeah.
Yeah, you can reuse stock shots from space because a ship passing... through the darkness of space is a ship passing through the darkness of space. So,
exactly.
So, anyway, this leads to the confrontation where basically Apollo threatens what's his name again? Phelan. See, this is how memorable this guy is.
Yeah.
See, that's why my earlier complaint is. I think he should have been much more memorable, and I remember at the time he was cast in the third X-Men film and was also really underused there, too. Because it's not the only thing wrong with that film.
No. Actually, the only thing, the only thing that I've seen him stand out in is Predator.
Yeah.
Yeah. And wasn't he also in Commando as well?
Yeah, he was the one who says, these Green Berets can kick your ass. And Schwarzenegger says, I eat Green Berets for breakfast. So I was just wondering if he has eggs with him, you know, but still. he could have had a muffin or a hot cross bun, but no, he has to have a Green Beret. And actually, that scene is a lot better than this entire episode. So, Phelan basically threatens to kill Apollo. Apollo points a gun at his head. Phelan says, you're not going to shoot me. Apollo tries to bluff him by saying Galactica knows where he is. Mayhem ensues, and then Apollo basically commits murder.
Yeah.
Yeah.
He goes, you won't shoot me. And it's just like, actually, yeah, bang. And then he basically just threatens everybody else, saying, right, black market will stay. It's needed. But no more children. No more withholding medicines that are required.
No more killings, I think he said.
Yeah, but that was sort of murders. Because
my murder is the last one.
Yeah. Do as I say, not as I do.
Well, he is an officer.
Yeah. But, that's then that, really, for the black market itself, mm-hmm. Not the episode, because we've still got a bit with Boltar to come after this. But yeah,
well, you've also got the bit at the bar where she tells him that she can't see him anymore because she can't be what he wants her to be.
That's right,
because he wants her to be essentially that girl he left behind, and she can't be that for him.
Yeah, and again, it's something that's just never referenced or seen again. Not the girl from his memories, not the prostitute, not Pyre, not really much on the way of the ship. No. And yeah, after that is when we go back to Gaius being summoned by Laura Rosalind. Basically, she's trying to get him to step down.
Which is probably the best scene in the whole thing.
Yeah, the one thing that did get me is the way this is sort of made to look is that possibly weeks have gone past since the Blackbird incident. But then you see Rosalind when Boltar walks in, reducing the number by on the population on the board, which it's been reduced by one since the last episode. Though I always thought that she was reducing it by one because of the suicide bomber. But then if that was the case, weeks haven't gone past. And it's just like, so where has all this relationship and everything else gone? Which just makes most of what we've seen in this episode still completely pointless and wrong. So it's just like, what's going on? Because there's no...
Yeah, this is, sometimes it's hard to get a sense of the timeline.
Yeah, especially this episode, because there's just nothing at all that indicates how much time has passed, apart from that number being reduced. But then that would indicate that that had only just happened, which made everything that's just gone on really, really wrong. It's just like, huh?
It's either a few weeks past the previous episode epiphanies, or it's not.
Yeah, but yeah, as I said, it looks like this has only just sort of happened, like, a day or two ago. But if it was a day or two ago, still, why would she be reducing the number only just now, given how important that board is to her with that count? So
the thing is with her asking Boltar to step down now is another thing that I didn't get, because that would trigger another election, which would give Zarek another chance.
Well, it depends on how it works for vice president.
Yeah, it's true, yeah.
Because, I mean...
She has been voted in as president, yeah. So she could then pick her vice president. The thing is, she only chose her vice president as him was to basically stop others from getting the presidency.
Now, they had an election the first time around when they didn't have a vice president. It's possible that they wouldn't have to have one this time. And it was, you know, not a general election, but I think just an election of the quorum of 12, right?
Yeah.
Yeah,
am I remembering that correctly from Bastille Day back in season one?
Yes, which is better than this.
But you know, she's also in a pretty good position of power at the moment, because you know all that stuff came out about her religious prophecy thing. So I mean, she's very firmly in charge at the moment, and her and Adama have patched things up since their, you know, the attempted coup back in season. Back right at the end of season one, and I think she feels like she could win an election for, you know, her handpicked candidate could win for vice president probably, if it wasn't even if it wasn't Boltar who was the popular choice way back in season one.
Yeah, I've just done some digging, referencing what you were saying earlier, Dragon, about saving money with using reusing scenes and all that. The scenes where Leia Dama and his ex on Caprica were filmed in exactly the same location as Rosalind's doctor. So
just somewhere around Vancouver, I'm sure.
Yeah. Basically, they obviously hired the office for a week and filmed loads of scenes from different angles.
It's funny because I do know someone who lives in Vancouver, and he says he has a lot of fun noticing familiar places around town. Because so many TV shows are filmed in Vancouver. You know, Fringe was filmed in Vancouver. Arrow and The Flash are all filmed in Vancouver.
X-Files was filmed in Vancouver. For
Stargate.
It moved there in the original run, and I don't know about the latest revival series where that was shot.
It's like a lot of films that were filmed in Chicago instead of New York.
Yeah. So, but no, the new X-Files was a lot of it was filmed in Vancouver. I saw a behind-the-scenes thing, and there's one bit where it looks like they're in DC, and literally it's just sort of downtown Vancouver.
Yeah.
The other thing I found out in my digging, this is funny. The cigarettes they were selling in the back market are called Saracoma, which is actually a form of cancer.
Oh, excellent.
So apparently it's a form of lung cancer, so there you go.
You know, it's funny mentioning smoking, because I mean, Battlestar Galactica is one of the few series in sort of the modern era that really shows a lot of smoking.
Yeah, because most things don't these days.
Yeah. You know, aside from like period pieces.
Yeah.
And even then sometimes. You don't see a lot of smoking on Downton Abbey.
Yeah. But going back to Boltar and Roslyn, one of the things is it wasn't until she asks him about stepping down that he actually thinks, nope, I actually want to have a political career because it's one of these things. I'm not wanted. Screw you. I'm going to do it anyway. Because he feels threatened and he doesn't want to lose the power that he has.
Don't know what you got till it's gone, right?
Yeah. Right, two questions for you two then. First of all, where was the stuff at the black market coming from, given the fact that they have a finite amount of resources and that in space? And also, when Adama says, you should have told me about the girl, did he mean the prostitute or the girl on Caprica?
Well, with regards to the items, I thought that, especially when they go, oh, we won't get more stocks of that until next week. And I'm thinking, why are they going to stop off at the next planet and go down to the co-op?
So the only possibility is they're getting them from the other ships, some of which we know do have manufacturing capability for certain things. And also, Pegasus had just joined the fleet, so they probably got an infusion of stuff from there.
Anything is given how sort of the military is in command of the fleet, you would have thought that the stores would have been managed an awful lot better. Though, yeah, I wouldn't have thought that the black market wouldn't have gotten as big as it had done. And if it had, it would have actually been controlled from either Galactica or Pegasus.
Do you know, I've now got an image in my head of Galactica doing drive-thru. They have, just for those of you that don't know, because obviously Draken knows you, but in America they have drive-thru chemists. So just putting that out there.
Well, I believe we call them pharmacists over here.
Oh yeah, sorry, yeah, pharmacists, yeah. But it's that's one of the first things I clocked the first time I went to America was a drive-through pharmacist, and I thought, wow, you haven't even got to get out your car to get your drugs. There you go.
I'm often having to sort of translate British slang and British terms into Americans because I have so many friends and acquaintances from the UK now. So I believe chemist equals pharmacist over here.
Actually, it's funny you should say that. I went through a spate of doing an unending amount of podcasts, much like Steve does now, with Americans, and I actually started saying aluminum. So.
That's funny, because in my head, whenever I'm thinking it, I think aluminium.
Oh, I do a lot of Americanisms, especially with things like color, because I do coding, especially with like HTML, so you never have the U in it. So the amount of times I'm writing it and it, sort of spell check goes wrong, thinking, no, it's not. And it's like, oh, damn it.
way back when I was in school, I occasionally got marked down on things because I would spell color with a U. Because I read so much Tolkien, and, you know, he spelled things like a British person, because of course he was.
Yeah. So,
yeah, I definitely had some incorrect spellings according to Americans.
So, which girl do you think he means?
I think he means the original one.
Because the only... We see Lee remembering his girlfriend, but I think the only one that got known about because of probably a report that was written up would have been the prostitute. So, it would have been the girl and her mum. Would have been sort of specified as somebody within these reports, as well as gossip about other people who were there about what had gone on. So I think it was the prostitutes rather than this other woman who he was just thinking about.
I think that's a quite reasonable conclusion. The reason I think it might be the girlfriend back on Caprica was that Lee and his father had this like epic period after his brother's death of not talking. And I think he he might have just essentially confessed all to his father, because we kind of come in on the tail end of him reporting to Commander Adama, and we don't know if he told the whole story in that, you know, he was essentially with this woman because she reminded him of someone. And he might have just said that to his father, and his father's like, I never knew about this girl, this original one. You should have told me back then.
Given how long they didn't talk for, he could have had loads of different girlfriends.
That's possible.
Then there was the thing with Kara Thrace as well. It's just, I don't think he probably would have talked to his father about those memories. I think he would have just kept it as a report of what had been happening, because he was using this woman as sort of comfort. And yeah, that's why I think otherwise. But
yeah, I think he might die.
I mentioned Thrace, and one of the things you mentioned earlier on, Colin, was we didn't see her, but she wasn't the only cast member that didn't appear, because we didn't get any of the engineering crew, so we didn't get Callie and Tyrrell.
No Sharon.
Yep, no Sharon, no...
no other Sharon, no other Sharon.
Yep, no Gator, because I don't think we saw him either. So, yeah, there was a huge amount of sort of the regular cast.
That was down the calf.
But, yeah, it was a bit strange that we didn't see them, because we did see some other sort of crew members around, you're going to say Pegasus, Prometheus. But they weren't any of the regular cast or crew sort of thing. And, yeah, you've got to wonder what the reason was for that. Maybe it was just cost, but yeah, it was a bit of a weird episode.
Well, it depends on the contract, because as is well known amongst most people, in Star Trek the original series, the only one that was not on a contract was Chekhov, Walter Koenig, and he got paid on an appearance basis only. So if BSG had appearance only payments for basically what is essentially the main cast, but the support main cast, so to speak, it could have been a budget thing.
I thought a lot of the SAG actors, you're paid by day that you're basically there.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. So if this was, to all intents and purposes, a bottle episode, the less people that have any, the less they have to pay out. And, you know, a lot of this, we've already said they're reusing sets. You know, a lot of the support cast would have been like, you know, bit part actors who get minimum fee. So, you know,
the alternative is that they could have actually been filming another part of another episode, because one of the reasons this could have been Lee heavy is because if they were filming this at the same time that they were, say, filming Resurrection Ship, that Lee wasn't in a huge part of that when it came to all the battle. So it could have been a day or two that they were doing all those scenes where he wasn't in it.
It could have been. But
and you think, you know, the episodes on the other sides, you know, around this particular episode are not very Lee heavy. You know, Epiphanies is mostly about Roslyn,
yeah,
and, you know, Baltar's in it a bit and that sort of thing. But,
yeah.
And, you know, so upcoming, we have a Starbuck episode and we have, you know, episodes focusing on the other characters.
Yeah, so it could have been a scheduling thing. So while all those cast were busy filming those bits, they'd got another camera crew doing all this episode. Because
it's true, because they don't always film one at a time.
Because the primary cast are on a contract, they didn't probably want to waste his time of literally doing nothing. So that's maybe why we've got this Lee Adama episode.
Well, we don't know when this was filmed, because this could have been, I mean, it's a bottle episode, it can be completely out of context with anything else.
Yeah.
Apart from, obviously, the reference to Baltar being Vice President. And we have also already established that, you know, where he's on Caprica, that's where Roslyn was seen in her doctor. It's the same set, which is a royal building, obviously. So, you know, they could have filmed this any time, you know, while other stuff was going on. So, you know, it comes to somewhat when the most interesting
I don't
part
think
of
they necessarily
guessing
filmed
when
them,
it was filmed.
I don't think they necessarily filmed them wildly out of sequence, because you do need to film one episode. If my knowledge of TV is worth anything, I think it takes about a week to prep and a week to shoot, generally speaking. And they don't film them wildly out of context, except in extreme cases like, the series finale of Battlestar Galactica was or not Battlestar Galactica, Babylon 5 was filmed at the end of season 4 and actually wasn't used until season 5 because they didn't know they were going to have a season 5 at the time. Or, you know, it wasn't for sure.
So yeah.
They filmed it and then decided not to use it when they actually got a season 5.
I think I read somewhere that TNG had a 6-day turnaround per episode. So that basically goes into what you were saying.
They're probably all going to be different.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So anyway.
Depending on the crew and everything.
That's Black Market, folks.
Yes.
Sorry about that.
We actually were able to fill the airtime even on a substandard episode, so that's great.
There, yeah. Next time we'll be reviewing Scar,
which is far superior.
Oh yes.
Yeah.
So looking forward to that one, and I'm sure you all are too.
Yeah, and you won't need vodka for that one. So, as always, folks, if you want to feedback to us, you can do, and we would love if you did. And Steve is now going to tell you how.
You can get a hold of us at Frackstars on Twitter. You can get hold of us frackstars@gmail.com, and we have just created a Facebook page as well, so you can get us on Facebook. And coming soon will also be Google+. So yeah, we will let you know when that is done.
There you go. And as always, folks, you can feedback to us individually on social media. You can get me on COLMH01 on Google+ and Twitter. Drogon?
Best place to find me is on Twitter at Drogon, DROGYN 1701.
Stay.
And you can get hold of me at MidnightShadow7. That's Knight spelt NITE and the number 7. And that's on basically all the social networks.
There you go. And as always, folks, you can find the rest of the podcast on holosuitemedia.com, which you can also find ways to help support the network, because obviously things like this have to be paid for, and I'm sure Xander would appreciate the help. So thanks for listening, thanks for downloading. Please feedback to us. We would really appreciate to hear from the outside world. Any views, suggestions, whatever, just feedback to us. So until next time, where we'll be doing Scar, we'll see you then.
Goodbye, everyone.
Goodbye.